no fortitude.
Good morning, members of the board, staff, and public. Want to welcome you to the May 11th regular meeting of the Napomo Community Services District. Please rise and join me in a salute to our flag. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And before we get started with our regular meeting here, we have a little recognition for one of our staff members, employees. Johnson, please step forward.
Thank you.
There we
speech.
You know, Mike, a guy could get choked up listening to this.
So with that, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Director Wersing?
Here.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Here.
Director Eby?
Here.
President Rohaila?
Here. At this time, I want to open it up to our public comment period. With Sheriff Commander Basti. And I want to take this moment to give my heartfelt appreciation for the removal of that
blight behind you on the county property.
Now, I don't want to say blight. You don't say that in Oceano or you get stoned to death. So that thing that was back there on the county property.
Well, you're welcome, Mr. President, and good morning, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. Martin Basti, Sheriff's Department, congratulations. Ms. Johnson on achieving that milestone. I'm surprised you didn't give a clock like the county does. I don't know if that's because your time's ticking or they expect you to be on time or what, but 25 years is a milestone. In reference to that car, and we did try to get it removed through the abatement process prior to it being set on fire, which then became even worse. And so now it is once removed. So. It's kind of a slow process, and we are working with COTSA to try and figure out something on those abatements because they are a problem, and then they do become a significant problem when somebody sets fire to them or vandalizes them or steals from them or whatever, so we try to get rid of them as soon as possible. A couple of things happening. We had one significant residential burglary and one fairly minor. Both those have suspects because they're neighbors, so we're getting those resolved. Other than that, no major incidences. We do have 5 new deputies, started Sunday, so they're on their first 2 weeks of orientation. They have to get qualified and get their mandatory report stuff done, so they'll be on the streets. So we see some new faces. We rotate them at 8 weeks at a time through each of the 3 stations as part of their training program, which lasts about 6 months, and then we have 4 more coming out of the academy June 3rd. So. That'll still leave us 5 behind, which we're going to the board in June at issue to try and get those positions restored that we lost last year. Today and then effective Monday, we'll be on a new report writing system. It'll be much more efficient. It's a paperless system where we can scan in attachments and send it directly to the DA's office or instantly forward it real-time to our detective bureau for follow-up. And we are also shortening up misdemeanors with no suspects, no follow-up leads like lost cell phones that are required by the phone company to get reimbursement on the insurance policies. We'll be on a short form, so it should make things a lot faster. This is the first records management system change since 1983, and those of you that have some computer background knowledge, we're currently working off a mainframe system in our law enforcement, so this is going to a Windows program, which will be much more efficient, and also as far as pulling records from previous cases, we can do it with much more ease, and we can do it at our remote satellite stations as well as our main station. In addition to that, we're getting our CAD linked to our substation so we can see real-time the calls that are coming in. So from a management or supervision standpoint, we can get the cars where they need to be a lot quicker because we'll have access to the computer-aided dispatch system to see what calls are pending and which ones have been answered. And lastly, we're reinstating a graffiti paint over program. Miners Hardware in Grover Beach was kind enough to give us a pallet of mismatched latex paint. So we have 101 flavors that we can paint over the graffiti. We've also secured a volunteer that's willing to go around with the paint as soon as we get notification. We did have a graffiti issue at the school that their folks cleaned up. Oceano came in and spray painted on the sidewalks at Napomo High School. And it's real important to get those things covered up and eliminated as quick as possible. The problem is it's significant as it used to be, but we do have now somebody available that will do it for free and a paint supply so they can get that cleaned up as quick as possible to get rid of the ugliness from it. With that, we're just getting ready, geared up for the first holiday coming up at the end of the month. That's one of our big ones, and then we start supplying folks for Nacimiento and Lopez and some of the recreation areas, as well as augmenting and assisting the folks on the beach. So we're just prepping up for summer. With that, is there any questions?
Did they give you any more vehicles when they added folks?
No, because we were short. Actually, at the first of the year, we started with 17 bodies short, so no additional vehicles. Currently, we have 9 and 2 four-wheel drives, so we have sufficient vehicles to staff the numbers that we have. Any other questions?
And seeing no other questions, well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and congratulations again, Donna. May you have another 25 years.
And CDF Fire Captain Felix Camacho. It's good to see you again, Felix.
Good to see you, too. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having us. I'm Captain Felix Camacho. Chief Dan Anderson couldn't make it this morning. He was off today, so in his place, it took the three of us to try to fill in for him. Couple things going on in Nipomo. We have, we're about halfway through our FireSafe, the free chipping event. Nipomo, again, was divided into three zones. We completed zone one on time with about 60 entries in that zone. We're currently working on zone two, which is basically the core of the west side of the 101, and we have at this time 155 entries in that one. And yesterday, they had just gone over the halfway mark. The rain took 2 days of chipping away from us. So that, I think, if we were able to stay on track, we'll probably still reach the deadline, which would be Friday for that one. And Zone 3 still has until May 16th to sign up. That is basically the east side of 101 with a little bit of the south end on the west side of 101. And right now we're looking at over 50 entries in that one, but they still have another week to sign up for that. It's been going good, like I said, except for the rain that cost us a couple days with the chippers. All in all, between Station 20, which is here in Nipomo, and the west base of Station 22, for the month of April, we ran a total between the two stations of 197 incidents. Of those, 25 of those were calls for fires, 28 of them were for vehicle accidents, 74 for medical emergency medical services, and then 29 other miscellaneous, which it includes hazardous materials and public services, that type of stuff. Significant calls, probably the biggest one we had for the month that stands out is a what turned out to be a double fatal head-on collision down here on South Thompson Road. And it was a pretty significant incident. We had a pretty intense extrication with one of the victims that was entangled in the vehicle. Both victims that perished after the incident in the hospital, not on the incident itself. And there was a total of four people between the two cars, and of those, two of them perished. We are looking at starting our fire season. Right now, we're on schedule to begin hiring our seasonal firefighters. The week of May 16th, they'll come on board for a week of their refresher training. These are our seasonal firefighters that we bring back every year during the fire season. They'll go through the first week of refresher training, and at that point, we'll start staffing our what we call our Type 3 engines, or our wildland brush engines. And the target date will be a week after they come on duty to start staffing the engines. We have a four-wheel drive brush fire engine here at our station, and it's available. It's just uncovered right now. And once we bring the seasonal firefighters on, it'll be staffed 7 days a week with a minimum of 3 personnel. We've also, with that, started what we call our LE38 inspections, which is our weed abatement inspections. In the state areas, we mandate a minimum of a 30-foot clearance around a structure. And in some areas, depending on the target hazard classification, which an example would be Sway Creek or Upper Los Barrios, we will move that up to a 100-foot clearance around the structures. Right now, we're doing it with state vehicles. Marked vehicles are going around issuing weed abatement notices. Once the fire season starts officially and we bring our seasonal firefighters on, you'll see the fire engines going out and doing that also. Right now, they're going to start with, we've just finished the Lopez area, and we're moving into the Sway Creek area. So that's, we'll be there, and then from there, we'll move into Upper Los Barrios Canyon. And the last thing I have is our Mesa Station 22. Their new fire engine has come in. It's at our service shop up in Paso Robles right now. It's a brand new fire engine, a really nice engine. It's a new model for us. It's got a real short wheelbase that's going to allow it to get into a lot of tight driveways and areas like that. It's an area that's been run real successful down in the Riverside area. That's a kind of a combination between a structure and a wildland firefighting engine. And they've been real happy with it down there. We just received it this past week. It's being outfitted and striped with decals. And we anticipate having it back down in the Pomo area in service probably in about 2 to 3 weeks. So with that, if there's any other questions.
And then the two parcels, you know, one behind us and then across the street, I believe.
Open vacant lots?
Well, that's county property. It's not county parks, but it's county property. I wish you'd cite them.
We received notices on it. Right now, for San Luis Obispo County, in the county areas, there is not a weed abatement program for open land. What we've been trying to do, because we do have the authority on the state responsibility areas, which is the outlying areas basically in the Pomo, to enforce the clearance around the structure. Legally, that's our precedent that we can follow. What we do is we accept any abatement complaints from citizens or just, you know, by us going out and seeing it and try to encourage the property owners or the landowners or something to clear. We've received several on the lots that you're referring to, and we're trying to work out something with these individuals to try to get this property cleared up and stuff. I know we're looking at some areas 6 to 8 feet of just grass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's higher than an elephant's eye.
Exactly. And
Oklahoma.
So we do have a fire prevention person that's been assigned to us that is going to start this week. And some of the target areas that they have are these lots and stuff around the Pomo. So they're going to be, and they're out of our Fire Prevention Bureau, so they have a little bit more of an avenue that they can work to try to follow up with the property owners to work on those clearances. But we do have those items on our list up there.
Usually Mark Wagner, the supervising parks ranger himself, comes out with a tractor and cuts it. He has in the past, so.
And we will get in touch with them on that too, because I mean, we see it every day too, and it's this year especially we've noticed there's not the grazing that there's been in the past, and you know, not just in town here but in the little outlying areas there's a lot of grass here, so we're anticipating you know, potential for a pretty serious event if we don't get something taken care of with that. So besides the outlying areas, we will be working around town here with some of the local responsibility areas to get some of that cleared up.
Okay, well, thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Wood?
I do. You mentioned the traffic fatality there on South Thompson, and I realize that responsibility for traffic control is CHP and not your agency or the sheriff either, for that matter. But there have been 3 major accidents within 30 days in that same stretch, and 2 deaths. It would seem that there's enough evidence to show that that's not as safe as 55 mile an hour speed limit would suggest. So anything you could do to help make that a little safer?
We can work with CHP, we can talk with them, we can work with County Roads and see. I'm sure they have the statistics, which we don't keep at the fire station other than the calls we run on. But if they have the evidence to support it, we can certainly work with them. We've done it in the past on some areas. The last major one that I can recall that's actually seeing action come out of it is the Sway Creek turnout. Mm-hmm. That fatal incident that we had there last year was a significant mm-hmm. event that ended up prompting that to occur. So certainly voicing opinions on that matter would, you know, bring it to light a little easier.
Well, it's in a floodplain area, so there's running water that goes across the
very
road.
Very prone to it during the rain
season,
too.
And it is dangerous.
I know just shortly after that incident, we did have another one down in that general area, too, that was a...
My daughter was one of them.
Okay.
Rolled her car, and you guys were very quick, and she was in good shape. But even so, it's...
Yeah, it's certainly something we can definitely address and work with CHP and the county roads on that, too. Every year when we just completed our updated mapping programs, which not only give us the new streets and general information like that, but it also contains the posted speed limits for all the roadways. And our new dispatch system takes that posted speed limit and pulls the closest resources to respond to that incident based on the road speeds and stuff like that. So we can use that to kind of give us a basis of what general speed limits are for the areas and how it's been working out that way. Some of them have been updated recently, and so it's a new tool that we have now to start looking at the fire station level. Before, we didn't have this information.
I see.
So we do have that now. And Dan Anderson, our battalion chief here, has been real involved, actually, with working on that. That's been one of his main projects that he's working on.
Okay, are there any questions from the public for Captain Camacho? Okay, well, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us. Have a good day.
You take care, Felix. At this time, I want to open it to public comment for any items that are not on the agenda but within the purview of the district, and presentations would be limited to 3 minutes. Okay, seeing none, call it back to the board and our consent agenda. Do you have any comments on it, Mr. LeBrun?
A couple of clarifications. The resolution for the Lynn Road improvements actually came this morning. It was not included in your agenda package. We apologize for that. The engineering services agreement, there were no attachments. That's our standard engineering services agreement. We have a signed agreement from Canon, and we're looking for the board's approval to have the president sign and complete that agreement. And just quickly on the resolutions of property exchange, this was something where we requested easements years ago and actually received property and title. That ended up for the owners of the adjacent property where we were hoping for an easement, it ended up pulling their lot size down to under the 5 acre mark or whatever it was, so it was causing them difficulties with development. And they approached us and said, do you need to own this land? And we said, absolutely not. Easement's all we're looking for. And so that's what these documents, council worked out the proper documentation and have these documents in front of you for approval today. If there are any questions from the board, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, everybody have a chance to go through the warrants and minutes and any corrections, questions?
I have a couple.
Staff, okay, Mr. Eby.
On the minutes, page 606, top of the first, where it says Director Eby, the last sentence there, it said he stated his concerns about our water planning and outlined his concerns in writing, see attached. What I gave to the secretary was just to aid her in writing the minutes. It wasn't really anything I wanted attached. So if you just put a period after planning and struck the rest of that line, that would be happy because I didn't mean anything to be submitted in writing. Also, under the next paragraph under Director Verheilig, he stated that he and Director Eby will be meeting with the Board of Supervisors May 1st and 3rd. I think that should have been 2nd and 4th.
Right.
Because the 1st was a Sunday. So 1 and 3 should be changed to 2 and 4.
I'm glad you caught that in.
And that's all I have.
Any other comments? We'll need a motion to approve the warrants as amended.
So moved.
Mr. Wynn has moved.
Second.
Mr. Eby is second.
That's the consent.
Mr. President, just a couple things. Are we approving the consent calendar?
We're approving the consent agenda.
Okay. That's what I meaning I thought I items. Heard, I thought I heard the minutes.
D1 through D5.
Okay. And then I think before we take action, we should request public comment if anybody had.
Right. Well, just we have a motion now. I want to open it to public comment. Is there any public comment on our consent agenda of all the money that goes out, minutes, and 3 items? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Madam Secretary, Mr. Nguyen made the motion, Mr. Eby the second. Would you please call for vote?
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worthy?
Yes.
President Riley?
Yes. Moving on to item E1, before we start, want to let the board know that Mr. Trotter needs to leave at noon today. Mr. Nguyen.
Beyond sponsoring a resolution to thank Mr. Trotter for pushing us to an early conclusion, our resolution for today, will that be included in the minutes for next week? The resolution for Mrs. Johnson?
Have a motion to adopt.
I think if you wanted to have a motion to reconfirm the resolution, that would be fine.
Yeah, okay, then before we start.
It wasn't formally agendized, I don't have a problem with that.
Right. But since it has a resolution.
We're going to have a number missing in the resolution number unless we do it.
So we need to have a motion to reaffirm.
It's
resolution 2005-935.
And I would make that motion.
For Mrs. Johnson. And
second.
Motion by Mr. Nguyen, a second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worthy?
Yes.
President Riley?
You bet. Okay. Item E1 is mandatory solid waste collection, which we heard at our last meeting, the options. And Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. At today's meeting, we hope to establish the solid waste collection, mandatory solid waste collection within the district, and implement the annual rate increase, and at the same time bring a what's called the waste wheeler or package service, which will include waste wheelers, recycling, the blue wheeler, and then the green waste recycling wheeler, all to our Napomo customers here within the NCSD. The board on April 27th considered a number of options and selected option one, which again does include a requirement for mandatory solid waste collection and the annual rate adjustment and our waste wheeler service. In addition, the district with this option would pay one time $50,000 to the garbage company to offset the cost of the bundled wheeler service and help minimize those costs to our customers. And today we'll be introducing the new ordinance, and then as a rate increase, this does require a 45-day public notice period, and at which time then we'd have a second reading and adoption of the ordinance. And there is one issue that council would like to discuss in regards to consumer price index clause as part of our proposed ordinance. And he has that. This was something that was still in the works as of the agenda preparation. So council has concluded the negotiations with the garbage company on this and has passing up this copy right now.
Mr. President, members of the board, we did adopt option one, and what we did is provide you sort of a redline copy of our existing rules and regulations that show you where the edits to our existing ordinance take place, so that it would be easier than just writing, just seeing takeouts in an ordinance itself. So I just wanted to go through just some of the brief highlights of the changes that are in our ordinance. And if you go to this document that starts off with drafting notes in the upper right-hand corner, that actually has our rules and regulations, and it sort of puts the edits in a little bit of context. First of all, pursuant to the moving towards a mandatory solid waste collection, we had to define developed properties. And we came up with a definition, means any rural property within a district that is developed with a building or structure that, when used, is capable of generating solid waste. Developed properties include, but are not limited to, occupied residential property, multifamily property, and commercial property. So those are the properties that will be subject to mandatory solid waste collection. We also, if you go to page 4, because the property owner will be responsible for paying these bills, and there is a lien provision in here, we went through and we defined property owner, which is exactly what you think it would mean. It means any person owning a fee, or the person in the shoes, or the person in shoes, in whose, I'm sorry, there we go. I looked at shoes, I'm just going, that's not right. Yeah. Whose name the real title of the property appears by deed duly recorded by the county recorder's office, or the person in possession of the property or building under a claim or exercising acts of ownership over the same for himself or as an executor, administrator, guardian, or trustee of the owner. Sort of covers the whole thing. If you go to page 8 of that document, you will see section 7.04.050, which identifies that solid waste collection from developed properties is mandatory. If you take a look at C, we landed on one exception, developed properties that are 2.5 acres or greater that contain no more than two residential units are exempt from mandatory solid waste collection. The next paragraph down on page 8 is 7.04.060, which goes through the waste wheeler requirements for residential and the different types of service provided to commercial. Then if you flip over to page 11, and this is where I have some more of my comments. I just wanted to go through, if you go to page 11, you go to top of A, because we are going to mandatory solid waste collection, we do have to comply with Article 13D, Section 6 of the California Constitution, and that's that 45-day notice. And what the ratepayers or what the residents are actually approving there is the rate structure. And of course, it's sort of the goose and the gander, so to speak. If they don't approve the rate structure for mandatory solid waste, we would then just go back to what we have right now, which would be volunteer solid waste. That is held by a protest hearing, by the way. There's no vote. They would come, we will advertise a public meeting, and the property owners would have the ability, if they had 50% or more of the property owners protest the rate structure for mandatory solid waste, then the protest would be valid and we'd have to go back to our voluntary participation in our solid waste collection. One issue has come up, and that's paragraph C on page 11. And what staff recommends is that we include a CPI or cost of living formula in our rate structure to avoid multiplicity of going out each year for under Article 13D of the California Constitution. Last week when I was drafting this ordinance, Tom was out of town, so it was hard to negotiate or to figure out what would meet their needs and our needs. And by the way, the protest procedures and the notice that goes out to our residents will inform them of what the CPI clause is. And this is the CPI clause that I've used with other districts that we represent. And what's hard about having sort of a rate increase is that there's so many variables with solid waste. For example, the tipping fees at a landfill could go up. And if you have a CPI clause of 2%, and for sake of governmental regulation, the cost of landfill tipping goes up because they have to comply with new regulations, it's very difficult to predict with any degree of certainty how these regulatory influences will affect the prices of solid waste collection. So we landed on a provision that says that the rates will be subject to a yearly increase not to exceed 10% per year. However, the increase, if any, shall be implemented by a resolution adopted by the District Board of Directors based on a finding that the increases reflect the franchisee's increased costs of providing the service. So when we do increase our rates and charges, it will, from here on forth, it will be by resolution of the board with specific findings. And this will be included in our notice provisions to our rate customers. Further, we landed on the proposition that we would collect delinquent rates as part of this package. And so we're required to add section 7.09 to it. I'm going to go through this briefly. One thing I must tell you, through computer neglect on my part, you can see that I took this out of the Templeton Community Service District's mandatory solid waste collection lien requirements. So there is one reference from Templeton, and of course that should be Napomo. But basically, with the implementation of each, how this will work is that the franchisee will provide us with a list of developed property owners that have not paid the cost, the bills. And I would suggest that, that Tom, you try and do that by April 1st if we're going to make the August lien requirements on the county property taxes. Then the second thing that happens, this is all in the franchisee, he, by certified letter, sends a notice out to all property owners that are on that list saying, pay up, or you know, this is the Napomo Community Service District is going to go through these lien procedures. So there's a second sort of due process there that the owners of each property are provided notice prior to the district taking action. Then it comes back to the district. For those folks that have not paid their rates, the district would go through the procedures of Government Code Section 61621.2 to collect those delinquencies. And that requires a subsequent notice from the district. So the hope here is that a resident will not, or an owner will not, be surprised that all of a sudden he sees on his property tax bill a delinquency charge because he should have gotten two notices and two opportunities to pay prior to that lien showing up. And then lastly, the deal here is that the source of collection payment to the franchisee only comes from those liens that we actually collect on. That's 7.09.030, and the district can recover its reasonable cost of going through that collection procedure. So it's meant to be an opportunity for the franchisee to save money because he does not have these lien procedures for collection, and it should be revenue neutral to the district to go through that. And it does dovetail in with the mandatory solid waste collection, and of course the district's goal of complying with AB 939, which is the source reduction mandated by the state legislature. And with that, I'd be happy. Oh, and then the staff's recommended motion is to introduce the ordinance and instruct staff to, as amended, and to instruct staff to provide the notice and set this matter for hearing at the end of the 45-day notice period.
Mr. Trotter.
I have two questions. Are there any penalties connected to the delinquencies?
There is, under statute, we have the ability to declare delinquencies to a maximum, I think it's 1%, 10% cumulatively, but 1% per month.
What is a delinquency? What's the term?
Well, see, my anticipation is that we are not going to try to collect at the get-go a percentage for delinquent accounts. If it becomes, my experience with this, and Tom can verify this one way or another, is that usually by the time we get to our hearing, we're going to be down to 10 or less folks. Now, Tom might have a different view of that, but that's been my experience.
Tom Martin, from the South County Sanitary Service. Our own policy is that late fees are $5 a month or 18% per annum, whichever are greater. So if you're not paying your bill, there is going to be a late fee added to your bill as we go. And then once we arrive at the amount that we're coming to the board with, if the board has costs that they need to do, they are by statute allowed to add 1%.
Is a delinquency 30 days, 60 days?
We don't start hitting you until after 60 days. You have 60 days to pay your bill, and if not, then we start digging.
Mrs. Worsley.
I just would like for Mr. Seitz to clarify that, if I may have misunderstood you, the state of California is mandates mandatory?
No. The state of California mandates source reduction from solid waste, and also, so that's the mandate. And when you go to, of course, when you go to mandatory solid waste collection, because especially with its bundled services with the green waste and the recycling and then the regular garbage, you find yourself initiating programs that are very consistent with that policy, because then everybody in the district will have the opportunity to participate in the solid waste reduction. And Tom, the franchisee, accounts for how many tons of garbage, how many tons of recycling, and how many tons of green waste are generated from the community.
This might be a question for Mr. Martin. Currently, how many delinquencies do you experience here in our district? Not as, because we're a divided community, you know.
You had it in your staff report the last time around, I believe.
How many folks were not receiving garbage collection. I think what Director Wiersing is asking about is how many people typically are delinquent on bills?
Generally, in non-mandatory areas, it runs about 12%. I can get you the exact figure when I go back to my office. But, in the mandatory areas where we have tax lien, in Cayucas, it was 8 people that went to tax lien. In San Luis Obispo, it was 6 people. In Oceano, I believe there was about 13 that went. Basically, it's a very minimal process. Currently, what happens in Napomo is if you do not pay your bill after 120 days, we cut you off. We come and take away the cans and just stop doing it. So we don't have a lot of history with people that go on and on forever not paying their bills. We just stop collecting.
And we'll be advertising this mandatory service.
They should actually get 2 notices on this, one from us and one from Mr. Martin.
So it'll be in the bill?
No, actually we have a separate requirement under Article 13D, and it's much like the water rate ordinance notice that we gave out that kind of goes through it, goes through the protest procedures, identifies the costs, and exactly how they can protest and when the protest hearing will be set.
And this will be published?
Oh, yes. Well, it's going to be delivered to each home to each owner of property identified on the assessor's roll. So
It'll be just, it'll be a separate mailing. It's not going to be in the bill. I know,
we actually prefer to do separate mailings because people have a tendency to throw away what's in the bill other than the bill.
It's not looking like it's an invoice.
Yeah, if it's not an invoice, it just kind of goes in the recycling bin. So we prefer actually to just do a separate mailing ourselves as well.
Tom, I noticed in Black Lake, from time to time, they dump the barrels by hand. Now, is it an equipment breakdown, or what occurs?
The guys are allowed to dump the 32-gallon ones by hand if they so choose, because they think it's a faster way to get through their route.
Well, cul-de-sacs are tough on those guys.
Yeah, and the rule is that if it's a 64 or 96, you're supposed to let the truck pick it up.
Yeah.
But the 32s are relatively light, and they're allowed to empty them by hand if they choose to. We would prefer that they not.
I imagine you would.
Mrs. Worsing,
yes. This would probably be for staff. The current balance in the franchise or the solid waste fund is about $230,000. And I need to really have this clarified. What will these funds be used for? And it just seems to be building and building, and it's not being dispersed.
I've got an answer to that. We have proposed in our budget for 2005-2006 a conservation regulatory compliance position. There'll be a portion of that position that is funded from our solid waste fees to address solid waste conservation. We've done some limited street sweeping now within the district, and we'll be developing a street sweeping program in the coming year. There'll be solid waste fees directed to that. And then our support of the theft corridor and the trash cans, and then we'll be taking on collection of those cans. So we'll be working with South County Sanitary Service to.
Okay, I have just one question. I maybe should have called you personally, but I didn't think about it. The rates are collected by all the people, so I need to know how all the people are going to benefit from this, since just the business corridor seems to be benefiting from it.
I think you're speaking to the trash cans in the downtown core and street sweeping, I take it, in the core. We'll look at expanding the street sweeping on a broader community basis, but at the same time, I think that there is a community-wide benefit when our downtown and our Napomo community has clean streets and there isn't garbage line all over. I believe it's an overall community benefit, hard to measure and meter out. But.
So currently, isn't the county supposed to clean our streets because we paid our property taxes? And isn't that a benefit? I mean, I've ever lived before, we've had our street cleaned maybe about five times in 15 years, but I don't know how it happened.
The county has a street sweeper that is dedicated to the South County area, and right now it is not running. They don't have the money to staff it, and hasn't run in our community for some number of months. And the county points to the state's rating of local funds in answering as to how come they don't have staffing to do that type of service. So.
In the 8-plus years I've lived on Waypoint, I've only seen our streets swept once, and that was long before the state raided the county's coffers. I hate to say it, but my feeling is that our service for county-provided services down in this area are
But what the district, I believe, so. Instead, let's focus on what we can do and in here, not what the county, is maybe delinquent on
or
is not able to do. We have the solid waste franchise fee. We do have a good balance. I think the street sweeping provides a nice nexus. It is a solid waste collection mechanism or procedure. And again, we're slow here, a bit slow in getting to these things, I will admit. But we have had Tef Street swept now. I believe it's a great improvement. I don't know how many folks even noticed it. But I will work in the coming year to establish a contract and bring that in front of the board with a recommendation for street sweeping on a broader nature. And I think one of the things we'll look to have is whoever we contract with, there'll be placards on there that say that this sweeping is being provided by the customers of this district, and let folks know who's helping out with their streets and the maintenance of their community.
Well, we had our business there for quite a few years, and those streets were cleaned frequently by, you know, whomever they were at that time. So my whole point here is that I believe that whenever possible, we need to lower these rates for our ratepayers. Is what, you know, if we're going to have mandatory, we've only saved, what, $2 by mandatory.
If I might just address that. I think, you know, each time a rate increase comes forward, you will have the opportunity to look at your franchise fees and to look at your budgets and make a determination. There are a number of districts that have, you know, continually have lowered their franchise fees from time to time in order to meet a CPI clause or a rate increase. So you will have that opportunity on a continuing basis to do just that, if that's the board's desire. And I think that what would predicate those decisions is after you've had your, if you decide to hire a coordinator that's part solid waste, and I do represent districts that have exactly that in place, and they get a flat line about what their budget is and how their budget is increasing and adjusting, that they have, in fact, been willing to lower their franchise fees in order to meet rate adjustments. So I think that you will have ample opportunity to do just that.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, I have
Mr.
another.
Witten, short.
Everybody else has been long and I have to be short.
3 minutes.
Trying to move along here.
This is very
important. I can't limit your time, but I would
thank you.
Like to get our public comment on this. So.
Thank you. In addition to the things that the general manager mentioned, we also have creek cleanups every year, which is paid for out of that fee, which has been a benefit both to solid waste and to public safety in the area, so I think that's good. In addition, we have funded 20 or 30,000 at a time for semi-annual cleanup events here, where we brought in a car crusher and actually got rid of large numbers of vehicles, between 80 and 100 vehicles in a weekend.
And some hazardous waste.
With hazardous waste, additional costs, and other such things. So, although I share Ms. Wiersing's desire to keep the rates as low as possible, I would like to see the environmental coordinator on site. I would like to see our street sweeping contract working, and then when we see what those expenses are, then if there's a way of lowering that, if that amount just keeps rising beyond reason, then sure, we can cut back at that time. I have three things about the franchise agreement itself. First, on page 2, when it talks about developed properties, the definition, we say it include but not limited to, and then we name three things: residential, multifamily, and commercial properties. I realize that by saying not limited to, we can throw other things in.
Right.
But a significant additional item would be public facilities. Parks, schools, the library, fire stations, the Dan Adobe, any number of locations that wouldn't fit as residences or commercial. Unless the legal counsel tells us those are commercial, I mean, I don't know how that definition works.
I'm willing to, you know, this is a time, and if we need to clarify it, this would be, what I have done with 12 as a result of this, first of all, I think there was a mistake. I had the word occupied residential property, and I believe that it's just going to be, it doesn't matter if it's occupied or not, because it's, clearly we're not exempting people that are going to be gone for a month.
Right.
And I will add public facilities.
I think that's, at least we'll clarify for some people. I realize there was some way of wiggle room, but naming it I think is a little better. Next, I probably missed it in here, but we, generally part of our contract was that we would have, twice a year, we would have public cleanup days, which larger volume things, water heaters, whatever, could be taken out. And is that here, or is that just an understanding?
No, that's actually, what you have here is just those portions of our solid waste ordinance that relates to waste collection. You don't have in front of you the provisions related to franchisees' duties with solid waste, and both your franchise agreement and I think your ordinance addresses
that obligation. That is continuing on ahead.
I think originally it was one, and I think we've gone to two, so that may be something we need to change in the contract.
I think that's a tremendous asset to the community, and it's a benefit to everybody.
We'll ensure the contract reflects two dates, and okay. It sounds like the franchise is
good. Okay. Then on page 9, section B at the top of the page says the solid waste storage area will be located within 100 feet of the building and all that sort of thing. But then it goes on to say shall not be permanently located closer than 25 feet from any windows, doors, or ventilation from any building or any dwelling or other building. Is this something we put in for legal reasons but ignore for enforcement reasons?
No.
Because I can tell you that there's probably 80% of the homes in this community wouldn't qualify.
Yes,
probably even higher.
When we took over the solid waste, we were required by LAFCO to, we had certain requirements from that in the county. And basically what you are seeing here, what we adopted, was probably 99% of the county ordinances, and we just transferred them over to the district.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is that 7.04.070, which I think is the one that you're looking at.
Yes.
Has been in effect, and it provides the district, if they've ever wanted to enforce it, some enforcement issues, if the district in its discretion decided to enforce this provision.
Well, if we were going to enforce it, it would have to be even-handedly. We couldn't go selectively after just one person we didn't like. And I can tell you that within the urban reserve line, many homes don't have 25 feet from their house to their yard, to the fences, if you will.
But that's containers over 100 gallons.
Yeah, the right. Standard yeah. Waste wheeler is 32.
Is 32, 64,
and
96.
But we go up to 96.
The largest single container is 96 yes. For residential. So, I don't think it's...
So this is only talking about dumpsters and significant...
That's how I would read it.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I believe it's interesting you don't put the dumpster under out by the street where it's...
Or under the window where you can climb on the dumpster and jump through the window.
But if you look at restaurants around here, for example, I suppose they make them 25 feet, but I haven't really gone around and looked.
And we don't intend to, staff.
Okay. It's just that law that you don't intend to ever enforce is usually bad law. But if there are other issues here, if there's a state standard, if there's something that overrides, then of course we leave it alone.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any standard. Again, I think that this has to do with more in the health and safety issue as to if you have large open containers, the county certainly didn't want them to be in front of doors or windows that where ventilation is taken inside into the building for health and safety reasons.
Right.
I assume that that's the reason why it's there.
Okay. That's it for me.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Whitty.
One more question.
One more before we do public comment? Okay.
Okay. Is anywhere in this, does it address for ratepayers to, like, call up and I want to stop my service because I'm going to be gone to Europe for a couple months? And
Generally, what we've done in all the communities that we service, we have an extended vacation rate that we include. And basically, it's without disposal cost, because in the garbage business, 82% of our cost is driving down the street with a truck. And whether you're on vacation in Europe or not, the cost still remains. So we just give them a rate that is 82% of whatever you've approved.
And they get a discount?
Yeah, they essentially would then just say, sign me up for the lowest rate and I'll be on extended vacation. So they get 82% of the lowest rate that you've approved.
That's only with mandatory, though, of course.
No, that we actually do that in any of the communities we service.
So, I mean, like right now, I would still be charged if I called up and...
Well, in a non-mandatory area, you can stop service. You can just call me up and say, take my cans away for 2 months, and I'll start back up in June. It's only in mandatory areas that we service.
Tom, when you send your notice of an increase, be sure to include the present and future costs.
We do for residential,
That's a great help to folks.
Yeah, so they can see how much it's going up.
Mm-hmm. And we include the differential as well.
Okay. No further comments or questions. I'd like to open it up to public comment on this item, E1. Seeing none, bring it back to the board for a motion and second. The motion, I believe, is Mr. Seitz, that we would read the ordinance in title only and direct staff to proceed with public notifications.
Yeah, it would be to hopefully read the ordinance by title only, and then second, approve the ordinance as amended and instruct staff to publish notice and to bring it back for formal adoption.
I move that we read the ordinance in title only.
Okay, and the other things,
can we combine
and both? The ordinance as amended?
Yes.
And, direct staff public notification.
Does that need to be two motions?
I think at this stage, no. I think we can do it all by one.
Okay.
And to adopt as amended.
Right.
Yes.
We need a second by motion by Mr. Wynn, second by Mr. Trotter.
Yeah. Then I'll Secretary. I'll just read it, then you can take the vote. This is an ordinance of the Board of Directors in the Pomo Community Service District implementing mandatory solid waste collection, adopting district-wide fees for solid waste service, and amending Chapter 7.01 of the District Code to require waste wheeler service for garbage, recycling, and green waste collection.
Thank you. Okay.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
No.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President Verhaeghe?
Yes. Okay, item number E2 is our... at this time, before we get into that, I'd like to take a break and we'll be back at 10 after. That's 6 minutes. And by the power that Mr. Seitz says I have, I can limit this item to an hour. And by God, I'm going to do it.
We're recording.
We'll bring the meeting back to order for item number E2 is our district water service allocation ordinance. This was presented at our regular April 13th meeting and tabled or continued to our May 11th meeting. Before we start, I have a bag of warm fuzzies in case anybody needs a warm fuzzy instead of a cold prickly. Mr. Trotter needs to leave at noon. We have a 11:30
conference call
with Mr. Markman. So we'd like to get through this very quickly. Thank you. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. And actually, at our April 13th meeting, staff was directed to place this item on the agenda. And this is a review of the district's current allocation ordinance. I have to apologize, a fairly brief staff report here. I basically attached the items, reports to the board that were used in consideration and formation of this ordinance. And so what you have attached is a June 17th, 04 report from previous general manager Doug Jones and district consulting engineer Jim Gehring and district legal counsel John Seitz. And then the agenda item from October 13th, 2004, when the board adopted this allocation ordinance is also attached for reference. Staff recognizes that there have been some changes that might affect or that would affect the allocation ordinance, but at this point we feel that those changes are fairly insubstantial. The allocation ordinance, while not a perfect document, I think staff is free to admit that no document can ever be perfect, but we feel that it is working. I think the message is out to the community that the district is allocating water at a finite amount on an annual basis, and I don't know if that's led to this or not, but our summary shows that on the year, we've allocated 11.7 acre feet of water of our 51 acre feet of water. We did review the allocation at our last meeting to look at the different categories of allocation and found that those seem to be effective as well. We're seeing the depletion of allocations across the different classes in an orderly manner, if you will. Finally, we have a number of issues upcoming that may, urban water management plan update, I think will update the district's numbers as far as the water resources required for build out of the district and identify those sources. We continue to work with the county to try to push if you wouldn't mind, could you ask him to, well, he's done now, so sorry. Again, where I was at was there are a number of issues that will be coming forward in the months ahead that may in fact impact our allocation ordinance in a significant way, and at that time staff would then suggest that the board consider changes. Last, I want to say that again, we could tweak this ordinance and play with this ordinance and improve upon it. I will admit to that, but I don't feel that we would have a significant change at this point with how we're looking forward to the remainder of this allocation year, at least with the information we have today in regards to the county's growth cap ordinance and our build-out demands for water. And staff would also like to point out then the time required to tweak this ordinance and bring it back to the board, it is staff's position that this is not the best use of staff's time at this point, we have a number of other issues that are related to our water resources that staff is working diligently on, and I don't want to distract our efforts by doing something that I think would give us a really a pretty minor improvement. So with that, myself and council stand ready to answer any questions, or John may have.
Yeah, I would just concur with Mr. LeBrun's observations. I'd also just remind the board, this came back, was requested to come back to the board after the county was going to take action on the 9th. I think that was actually the motion was is to bring this back for reconsideration. I think there was, I don't want to prejudice what the board was thinking, but if the board had adopted an LOS 3, I think what the board members were looking at was how does our ordinance dovetail into what the county did yesterday? And of course, they maintained the LOS 2 designation, at least my reading of what they did yesterday. The allocation ordinance, what you have in your staff report is probably the highlights of the many meetings that we had with different agencies and the development community regarding implementing an ordinance that that restricted the district's allocations of will serve intent to serve letters. And this 51 acre feet is a significant restriction over the past allocations that the district was making. And more importantly, what it does is it sets water allocation limits, you know, on categories of uses. They have to have an engineer certification that the project is capable of complying with those. And lastly, it spreads the allocations over a period of time. In other words, a developer may have be required to come in and only take a certain amount of allocations per year so that we're, in fact, docking the boat. And depending on one's interpretation of the board action of yesterday, this allocation ordinance in its current state is consistent with the Board of Supervisors' actions of yesterday, which basically, I hate to, because we haven't seen the final outcome of it, but I think there were two major restrictions that were directed for staff to come back with. One is that all building permits or occupancy permits at some time will be conditioned on an in-lieu fee for supplemental water. And of course, we have our in-lieu fee in place. And secondly, that general plan amendments, in order to get a building permit under a general plan amendment, yeah, that will require wet water. So that's how I interpreted water. It. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Now, excuse me, John. How does that impinge on other water entities? How does it affect them?
Well, one of the things that the board did do yesterday as part of their motion was for county staff to attempt to bring the water purveyors together to form a joint powers authority to acquire supplemental water. You know, and it'd be very difficult for me to sit here and try to add absolute consistency to what the Board of Supervisors did. In fact, it just may well be impossible. But I think what's important about it is that the county is interested in forming a joint powers authority for supplemental water. We have talked with the attorneys from Cal Cities and Rural. They are interested, I mean, there's no commitments, in the same thing. And it seems to me that the county is also interested in having properties that are not within rural, not within the district, and not within Cal Cities pay a supplemental or in lieu supplemental water charge as a condition of development.
That would pertain to people drilling wells also?
Yes. Because that was specifically raised. Even if you were to put a well in the groundwater basin, you would pay an in-lieu fee. The idea would be is that either Cal Cities, Rural, or the district would reduce its pumping because it would have the in-lieu fee to increase its take of supplemental water. So that would, in fact, provide that those residential developments, even though they're pumping from the groundwater basin, somebody else would reduce pumping to a similar level as the new tank.
Yes,
sure. The San Lu fee to other purveyors, would it be redirected to the, like, the district that is pumping or supplying the supplemental water?
That's the vision. And what was decided upon yesterday, and there's quite a bit of work to be done with that. I think the Council for Board of Supervisors termed this putting some flesh on the recommendation and coming back to the Board of Supervisors. So, I think there are many unknowns, at least as many unknowns as there are now knowns. And again, I would like to just keep our discussion. We'll have time in our manager's report to discuss actions yesterday, and we'll be coming back to the board once we see county the transcript and the recommendation in a whole, to come back to the board and discuss just what that means. But in regards to our allocation ordinance, whatever questions we can answer in those regards, I think is appropriate now.
Okay. Mr. Eby.
I thought that one of the reasons that this came up was that we didn't have an allocation for commercial, and that's what triggered this. Wasn't there a committee?
There's been a subcommittee formed for commercial allocations. Commercial.
But they didn't meet yet?
Commercial mixed use. We haven't assigned the members.
Okay.
And then we'll be assigning members. But again, this, our current, is I think all directors understand, is for residential only, and that's due to the basis for this ordinance, and that comes from the county's residential.
Well, I tend to agree that this isn't really the best time to do this, and the reasons are, number one, I think you ought to have that commercial change available for this allocation thing. Number two, looking at the report that you had attached, well, there's a bunch of problems with that, but the urban water management plan, I think the facts that come out of that, I hope what's going to come out of that is a real projection of what our water needs are, not just somebody's guess out of the air.
Yeah,
and I
great.
Think this should be based on water needs and water supply rather than some arbitrary 2.3%.
Agreed.
Plus, what was attached to this is a bunch of erroneous assumptions. One of the assumptions was that a 15% water conservation or water cutback was in effect. That's what this was based on, and it isn't in effect.
Right. That's the June 10th document you speak of? Right. And that's something that I've had in front of the board previously and showed you that there's some addition errors in there.
Yeah. And in addition to that, it says it anticipates supplemental water after the year 2006.
Right.
Well, the year 3006 is after the year 2006.
I put that in your package to show that things have changed.
Right. And the third thing.
But that those changes aren't.
They had the Hermit Creek well down here as 300 acre feet per year.
Yes.
That ain't happening.
That's right.
So definitely we need to redo this, but I think the timing should be linked more to the urban water management plan and to the commercial reallocation.
And that's
you
right.
You can base it on what makes sense rather than population demographics.
Staff agrees.
Mr. Wynn?
Well, I would agree with Mr. Eby's comments, of course. I think those make good sense. I think the reason we're looking at it today is because our water allocation ordinance requires us to look at it on a regular basis to see if we need to reallocate within the categories or not. And I assume that that's all we were looking at today, and I don't see any.
No, actually, that item was on the board's agenda. It may have been April 13th. It's on the agenda today in direct response that the staff was directed by the board to put the ordinance on for discussion of the ordinance itself. Now, we did do our midterm review, and we had a motion from the board that there was no need to tweak the categories at that point. So this was separate. So I just wanted to make sure that the board's clear that the midterm review has been completed.
The urban water management plan is not likely to be updated until November.
Completed. I'm hoping that we'll have at least some updated numbers and projections. They may be drafting the urban water management plan, but if we're comfortable enough with them, we could use them as a basis.
But we would not want to change policy based on draft numbers if they're not formally approved by the board.
Well, I think the time to take that up is in the fall when we're looking at a new water year coming at us, and we can take a look at the numbers that are being generated by our consultant on the Urban Water Management Plan and make some finding or decision as to are we more comfortable with those numbers or the numbers that were in that June 10th, 2004 document.
And then I also agree that the commercial, whether we are going to make a change there or not, that should be folded into any finished product. So I totally agree.
So if we're not going to change it, you don't need any motions, do you?
Well, we need to have public comment. So if there's no further comments or questions from the board, I'd like to open this item up to public comment. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And what's the board's desire?
I move that we accept staff work today with appreciation and leave it unchanged until we have the information necessary to look at it more substantially.
And add commercial.
Do we need a motion to do nothing now?
Well, it's agenda,
well,
so
it's
there has to
an
be
an agenda
some
item. We do need
agenda.
Something. Mr. Trotter?
I was going to second the motion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Trotter. We have a motion by Mr. Wynn, a second by Mr. Trotter. Madam Secretary?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Yes.
President
Rahilly? Yes. Item number E3 is the service allocation that was brought to us on April 13th and was continued to this meeting, May 11th. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Rahilly. President Verheilig stated, this service request was in front of the board on April 13th and was tabled at that time and requested to be brought back today. The staff report for the majority of this item is identical to that which the board received on the 13th. I do want to point out this the recommendations on the second page at the top in bold are wording changes that were actually discussed on the 13th. And amended just a bit here. The wording is straight out of our resolution that was adopted on that day regarding when capacity charges will be credited to a project. And this is meant to make it very clear to applicants that new capacity charges are in place and will be applied. In addition, I've added a note of the current water capacity charge so that we're very clear that applicants are aware that these capacity charges have changed and they've changed significantly. Finally, I'd like to point out that this project has somewhat of a unique condition that staff's recommending, and that's covered in the final paragraph of background on page one, and that's regarding this waterline looping. And this is where staff is asking that the board direct the applicant to require a looping at the end of the property. We've got our maps out there, but this will be a new road coming up, and on either side of this development there are roads on outside. We've got the properties that if approved will be served by this subdivision, and then to both east and west there are water lines that are one property over. And the requirement and the condition is that staff is requiring, asking the board to require the applicant to obtain an easement and provide looping of the pipeline that would be coming up this to feed this development. The applicant can speak to this, but we had the discussion. They agree to this condition. Their concern is what if these neighbors, now there's some options here, so they're not just set where they have to negotiate with one person who can then, you know, play the hardball game. So there are some options, but what if they're unsuccessful in obtaining an easement and being able to loop the pipeline? And will that cancel their project? And what staff would like to make clear is that that in itself is not a reason to disallow this applicant and their right to develop. What we'll want to see in a condition, if this is the way it goes, is the documentation showing that they have exercised all due diligence and attempts in order to obtain these easements, and if they are then unsuccessful, then we'll consider their efforts.
Are the adjacent pipelines looped now?
One of them is. One of them is not.
See, that would be a benefit to the adjacent property owners.
That's
the
right.
The more looping you can do, the better off you are.
That's right. The better your water supply dependency, your water supply assurance, and then also the quality of that water that's supplied,
right,
because it's fresh. So we're hoping that the applicant can be successful, but we do want to be clear that if sometimes you just run into folks who don't want to work with you. The district's had that problem themselves. So.
Okay. Any comments from the board to staff?
I have a question. Although the applicant may answer it instead, I'm not sure how that works. Are these all legal lots? Are the parcels already formed and subdivided?
No, they're not. This is residential suburban zoning. We have one legal lot right now, and we're proposing to subdivide it into six other lots. By the way, my name is Steve Babcock of SB Plan.
The reason I ask is that, unless I misunderstand, you know, our policy is that we do provide water as required by legal entitlements, but residential suburban requires 1 acre minimums, and a number of these are less than 1 acre.
I don't believe so. We have 6.9 acres total, and each one of those lots is 43,560 square feet, I believe. That's the smallest. That's 1 acre.
0.88 acres, it says.
That's not our property.
That's not your property.
No, that's
so each of these are at least 1 acre?
Yes. They're actually, we have 6.9 acres total, and so that's going to be distributed throughout the property, and they'll actually be over 1 acre. They'll be about 1.1 acres.
Okay. Well, it doesn't have to be over one, but it has
right.
to be one.
Yeah, it's at least one, if
okay.
not more.
Good.
Yeah, these are all more than 1 acre gross.
They're over 1 acre gross, exactly.
And some are
They might under, be yeah. under an acre net, depending on the road easements.
Well, I'm not yeah. worried about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I happen to live on 0.91 acres net.
Yeah.
So I'm in the same boat.
Thank you.
Then, yes, if the applicant have any other comments?
I think our only comment at this point is that I agree with Mr. Trotter that this would be a benefit to loop the water lines in this project, and we're going to make every effort possible to acquire those easements. I have been talking to one of the property owners to the north. We're going through discussions right now, and she seems fairly reasonable. I think these points can be brought up to her, and we can probably acquire this, but we just want a mechanism in place in case something goes sideways on us and we can't acquire those easements. And I think you've stated it quite well that, you know, if it's impossible, that we bring letters of written from the property of the easement.
Yeah, I did have a thought that Live Oak Ridge runs to the sort of north of you there, and there is a water line on that.
Okay.
And that may be an easier connection to make if you can't get the people on either side of you to.
I can look at that with the applicant, but I recall that being two or three properties to the
yeah.
north.
Yeah.
Where either to the east or west would require
just
one property. And there's
okay.
actually three different property owners that could facilitate that.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's important to have options there so that the people you're negotiating with understand you have options, and that can really help them with the negotion along.
Yeah.
This comes off of Pomeroy. What What's a reference road that
Hunter Ridge is directly across our proposed...
excuse me, what's the name?
Hunter Ridge Lane.
Hunter Ridge?
Yes.
It's between Waypoint and...
Okay.
Oh, Olympic, and I think you're more than 500 feet okay. from this development, so you don't have to recuse yourself.
I already considered that.
Yeah, and it is our intent to extend Hunter Ridge Lane straight through for line of sight, you know, the possibilities of not having a connected road. So we're probably mm-hmm. going to just name it Hunter Ridge North or something.
And so then we're being asked to approve six connections.
Yeah.
Do you have a gearing examine the hydraulics of this pipeline such as this?
Have we had it?
Will you or do you?
Yes, well, the plan check will go out to a consulting engineer.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Does this property have a well on it?
I'm assuming they do since they're not currently...
Yes, we do, but I believe... I don't know if it's good or not. I really don't know.
I saw a tank on the...
Right, and we have identified that on our map, but I'm not sure what the pumping capabilities of it are, if they even have a pump in it at all.
If they do have a well, what is our policy on...
That we allow them to maintain that well if they so desire, and for any... If that's on one of the final parcels, then that parcel would be required to have a backflow prevention device installed, inspected by the county prior to receiving a meter from the district.
I might be able to help with this a little bit. County Environmental Health requires that we abandon all wells if we're using services district water. So that well will be abandoned and capped. Mm.
Mm. Really?
I don't think we need to get stuck there, but we know with our Lynn Road annexations that are just completing that these people have been given the option that has been this district's policy for years that we've allowed well owners that option. We even had a well owner, customer prior to the Y2K shutdown of the nation install his own private well, and he's out in the Camino Caballo area.
I know exactly where the nut is. He also has a solar system that powers
his house. In any event, the district's position, and now if the health department has different requirements in place now, actually I think that those could work to the benefit of the district, but none of that is required by this applicant today by this district. We'd simply require a backflow prevention device that be installed and again inspected prior to receiving a meter from the district. That's our standard.
Open it up to public comment. Anybody from the public wishing to speak on this item? Please state your name. And
I'm Rich DeVlau, the owner of the property. I just had a question on that fee. It's $13,000. Is that in addition to, there was an $11,000 fee also?
No, that's our complete connection fee at this time. That includes our... For water only, that's of course what you're applying for. There won't be sewers to these properties, but that's our water connection fee, and that includes the $11,000 supplemental water premium, if you will.
Okay.
Per parcel.
Per parcel.
Per parcel.
Right. Okay. Well, I appreciate any help you can give us there.
Okay. At this time, bring it back to the board. Motion to issue intent to serve letters, or Mrs. Worsing, you have a question, comment?
Well, first I wanted to clarify something, and then I make a motion.
Okay.
We live in Olympic Way, so I'm well within, well far away from the 500 feet limit, so I want to make that clear and on the record, please. And I'd like to make a motion that we accept this project and pursue that looping.
Okay, do we have a second to issuing the intent to serve letter?
If the motion maker would agree to append, because you mentioned looping, if possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to
pursue it, I suggest.
We may just so everybody's cognizant, I maybe should put this on the record.
Yeah,
you know, the district, and I believe even the applicant, has some eminent domain powers. So, you know, if the end gambit comes into play, that he can't loot, I mean, the district would reserve its options to pursue its own actions and seek reimbursement from the developer to perfect those easements. I mean, that's, I think everybody understands that, but I want to make sure that, I mean, that would be an option.
We'll work together as needed, I think is.
Sure. Are you referring to eminent domain, possibly?
Well, yeah, I just want to make sure that you know, if the end game comes to play where there is, in quote, an uncooperative property owner, and, you know, and you guys can't cut the deal, the district stands in a little different place to cut that deal. And we have entered into reimbursement agreements in the past to acquire easements to make a project work. Just wondering.
Okay, Madam Secretary, we have a motion by Ms. Wersing and a second by Mr. Wynn. Would you please call for the vote?
Director?
Yes.
Director Twin?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President
Verheyen? Yes. And thank you very much for your patience and all that.
Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. We're grateful.
Scary
dog. Yep. Well, if you want to stick around for another few hours, you're welcome to join us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Okay, item E4, we can do this before 11:30, is our urban water management plan. The subcommittee of Mr. Wynn and Ms. Wersing have looked at proposals. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheyen. On Monday, May 9th, the subcommittee for urban water management proposals met and came to a unanimous conclusion to recommend to the full board the selection of SAIC. Science Applications International Corporation as our contractor or consultant to develop an update to our urban water management plan. It was interesting. We had two plans come back. We sent out to over 15 consulting firms, and we had two responses that came back with proposals. I had a number of thank you, but we're very busy now, and we would not be able to meet your timeline responses. And in any event, we had these two proposals come back. The proposals were substantially different in volume of material that was forwarded. And interestingly enough, the one that came with the lesser volume of material actually had more substantive material. Mm-hmm. The bids were quite a bit divergent also. One bid was for $57,000, and one bid was for $36,000, I believe the numbers.
29,
thank you. So even more divergent. So $57,000 and $29,000. And at first glance, we see a substantial difference in the cost for preparing the plan. But as we delved into this further and we looked at the hours that were being allocated by each of the different consulting firms, we found that actually both firms were, based on their dollars and hours, were at $105 per hour for preparation. So it was actually SAIC, which again had the higher bid at some $57,000, had the additional hours behind that bid also. So they were addressing, we felt, a more thorough addressing of the issue.
Is BB going to be involved in this, do you know?
He will be involved, yeah. Not directly. He won't be the project team leader, okay. but he will be consultant to the project team, and that's the other point that staff would like to make, and then I welcome comments by the members of the subcommittee, that SAIC is very aware of the water resources issues on the Napomo Mesa area and the Santa Maria groundwater basin as a whole. And with that background, they've come in ready to update numbers and put in place a defensible urban water management plan. And I think it'll provide this district with much needed information, as I've heard from a number of the directors, and I agree that we need in order to project forward.
Excellent organization. Excellent.
I think so also. So yeah. Again, I'd
very good.
If there are any other comments from the subcommittee,
were you able to get any assurances from Mr. Beebe as far as his independence is concerned on this?
It's a good point. I was, and this is referring to the fact that currently Mr. Beebe works for us through Mr. Markman, as our water rights lawyer, as you know, and that is a bit of a difficult relationship for the general manager because I don't direct the work, although we do get the bills like clockwork, and the bills aren't as articulated as in regards to the charges that as I'd like to see. And I've brought that up with SAIC previously on the work that they're doing on the adjudication, and I'm a bit in the middle there. This is the way Mr. Markman likes to see it, and again, he is directing it. I received a call from Mr. Beebe at SAIC right when these proposals went out, and he called to assure me that when SAIC is working directly with us, there's a different level of reporting and response to the general manager, and I appreciated that call, so I have had those assurances from
Beebe. Beebe did his apprenticeship at Arvin Edison. Mm. He actually resided in our office for a long period of time. Excellent, excellent. You can't do any better.
His
mentor was a fellow by the name of Bert Babcock, who has since died, but that's where Beebe was Babcock's understudy. Beebe is outstanding in that field.
Very, very sharp. Yep. So, the committee, and thank you, Mrs. Worsing, and Mr. Wynn, your recommendation is we go with SAIC?
It is, although it's not very often that we would say let's pay $56,000 instead of $29,000. But the difference was that as we started looking at it, it seemed to us that, first place, staff did a little survey and discovered that they were charging us essentially the same thing per hour. Mm-hmm. Boyle just planned on putting in half the time. Mm-hmm. And then based both on their prospectus to us and then conversations that they had with staff, it became apparent that Boyle had assumed that we just wanted to kind of tart up the old version and send it back up to Sacramento instead of a really fundamental rethinking and re-examination of the information, which we do want. We want something substantial. We just don't want them to sort of fix it up a little bit and send it. So given that, SAIC has all of the data here at their fingertips, which has been admitted to court as evidence, so it has some standing too. So given that, I was willing to go with the higher of the two bidders, and I'll let Ms. Wearson speak for herself, but I know we did agree.
The other, we believe that the Boyle probably would have taken further direction from us and delved into more charges and completed.
Right, change orders
right.
is what we talked
orders.
About.
Yeah. Right.
That we could very easily have come up with paying the same price. And again, looking at hours on that.
Yeah. Well, this won't be the first time, a little off the subject, but same with our rate study. Cliff and I looked at three responses. Boyle was one of them. And most of their substance was our contract is attached, and that formed most of the documentation that they submitted, where the Reed group, there was substance in there. Even though they were higher, we figured we'd get a better rate study. And I have to
Michael, more than I could wish for. Keep in mind, whenever you get a proposal, no matter who it's from or what the issue is, judge how much of that proposal is made up of background for individual contributors, education, history, that's over. Mm. And tell them, we don't need all that stuff.
Right. As a quick visual aid, just you can see it at a glance. This is the proposal they gave us. Yeah. That's how much was about us specifically in their proposal.
Yeah.
Everything else was
background.
Everything else was useful information, which we already had. In some parts, we sent it to them. Mm-hmm. And others, we had downloaded from the DWR just like they did. Mm-hmm. So that was it.
You can do society a great service. That's by jabbing them.
Why we didn't go with Boyle.
Right. I've already discussed with Boyle what the subcommittee's recommendation would be. And we're going to schedule a lunch or sometime, because I told them I'd like to give them some feedback that I feel would give them a better chance of being successful in the future with us. And it's just these types of things that I'll share with them. So,
okay, well, we'll open, yes, Mr. E.B.
What I look for in something like this is really their approach to doing the study, and neither one of them did much for what I would be looking for, because what I'm looking for in this document is, number one, compliance to the Urban Water Management Plan Act, and I hope that in their report mm-hmm. that they give us a compliance matrix where they list all the sections of the Act and give us a cross matrix as to where in their report they're compliant with all of those sections. I've seen this done in other urban water management plans.
There's a standard checklist, I believe, that DWR has out.
And then second, I think it's going to be, if they do it right, it's going to be a useful planning document for us. It'll help mm-hmm. us be a reasonable, decent basis for future allocations. And it should also identify alternate sources of water. I mean, we've got one right now. And supplemental water from Santa Maria will be two, but I really think it would be nice to have three.
Mm-hmm. Three or four.
Big organizations have multiple sources of water, not just two. Mm. Finally, I didn't read the details of what they plan to do or not, but I would hope that they would do like Canon did, come out with an initial outline for the report so we can get an idea on what they plan on looking into, and early in the game, steer them the right direction or tell them, yeah, that's what we're really after. I think when Canon did that, it gave us confidence up front that they were doing the right thing, mm-hmm. and also let us have feedback in the beginning to make sure that they were doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Then I assumed there was going to be some reviews. I would hope there would be an interim review so we could just check their progress, a review of the draft, and then a final review. That's what I would look for in this.
And I'd have to pick it up and page through it, but the SCIC report does outline a number of reviews and initial drafts, but I'll carry forward these recommendations and make sure that they're
and
covered.
I don't know how you would have those reviews, whether it would be the full board or does that have to be a committee? Or
I don't know.
Those are options we can look at.
Right.
Maybe like the very, very, very first could be just a review by the subcommittee, and then have a second after those are incorporated, then it could come to the full board for a review.
As one of the committee members, I can tell you, I would like to see the interim report be given to the entire board.
Yeah.
I just think there's going to be a lot more wisdom, a lot more insight if we all look at it as opposed to a couple of us who obviously we do our best, but I think mm-hmm. five of us will do a better job than two.
And to me, an interim report is not a written report. It's a presentation where they get up and tell us what they've done to date, what they haven't done to date, when they're going to do it, and mm-hmm. how they're doing compared to how they expected to be doing.
It's not a full draft, though.
Right, right. It's not even written. I mean, to me, it doesn't have to be written. It's just a progress report.
A flow chart would be nice, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Then I need a motion to approve the hiring of SAIC as a consultant for preparing our urban water management plan. Mr. Wynn?
Does committee members do that, or does that?
Sure, I think you should.
You guys can do it. Mr. Trotter can do it. Mr. Eby can do it.
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we accept SAIC as our urban water management consultant.
Okay, motion by and a second by Mr. Wynn. Madam Secretary, call for the roll.
Director Hudson?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President McLeod?
Yes.
And can we pass along to staff as you carry this out that the idea of a compliance matrix that Mr. Eby just brought up, I think, is a very useful tool, and that would be helpful to us in the final version. And then what I had said to you, that we do want them to not to miss our references to the landmark South County Planning Area General Plan for May 2002. Understand that that's, we don't have a rolling baseline. That.
Okay. We have, well, we have plenty of time. Let's move on to E5, our county growth cap discussion. Mr. LeBrun, would you like to introduce this item?
Certainly. This item is put on the agenda so our board can take a clear position on the county's upcoming consideration of growth cap in the South County area. Currently, the county growth cap in our area is 2.3%. I think actual growth in this area last year was on the order of 8%.
7.9.
8%, I'll go with
close to it.
I got close. And then the county will be considering this revising the growth cap for the South County area on May 24th. And currently the staff recommendation, county staff recommendation, is to set the Napomo Mesa area growth rate at 1.8%. And that's about everything I know about it, but I have a feeling that some of the directors here can add some information.
You know, I almost think that how that 1.8 developed was by a blurred vision. Because a lot of times when you look at the computer output for a zero,
it's got that line through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and that's how I think that that got involved.
I thought it was maybe they picked it up from the LAFCO recommendation saying if you didn't achieve your savings that they would recommend cutting back.
Ratcheting down.
Actually, it's more evil than that. This came before Kim Murray sent out a questionnaire to all the concerned parties, and one of them came to the NCAC. And at the NCAC meeting a couple of meetings ago, the NCAC unanimously recommended 1%. And this shocked the elected officers in the county, particularly our district. And there was some back and forth, and they ended up with 1.8. Now, where that number came from, I've been asking that for 2 weeks. Nobody can answer it, but they say it's not 2.3 and it's not 1. It's somewhere in between. They were afraid that 1 would be equivalent to a moratorium on building, and that's a poison word in this district. So that's, I think, why you ended up with 1.8.
Get to hear that one more time.
I'm very disappointed in Mr. Osage.
I am too.
He never sticks up for Napomo.
My best guess on this, and others may have their own guesses, is that the staff recommendation, as we know, is going to be 1.8, and I think the supervisors are going to keep it at 2.3. They have been rejecting our staff and planning commission recommendations consistently. I think their vote yesterday for a level 2 shows that they're not prepared to say that this is any kind of urgency.
They didn't vote for a level 2. They just voted for looking at these things.
They could have had a 2 or they could have had a 3, and their votes resulted in 2.
2 standing. Right.
And but the 2 was never established by data. It always was a political number from the first day it was adopted. And it continues to be a political number. I think for us to assume that they're going to go to 1.8, which is more than what the advisory council wanted, but even that, I think that's wishful thinking. And of course, it's disappointing.
Well, I have to agree with Mr. Wynn, and I think NCSD several times in its presentation says the level of severity is regarding the resource, not the consequences. It's regarding the resource. In other words, if you don't have enough air in your car tires, you fill them up. You don't just keep driving. And it's a resource decision. What you do about it, that's a whole other thing.
My question is if, and again, this is not, the discussion is agendized for today, but not any decision making, so I don't propose to make any motions, but we may want to consider dropping our own water allocation to 1.8, whether they adopt it or not. Simply say it is consistent with a level 3. We have been earnest and serious in our efforts to get that done, and our growth rate is going to now I realize that legally that gives us a little more exposure because we can't hide behind the county's 2.3 number, but at least it's going to be something for us to consider in the future.
I think if we really wanted to test the waters, we ought to drop our allocation to 1%.
The thing is that if we drop back...
The
only reason I say...
I'm saying this very tongue-in-cheek because, you know, it would then, I think, finally clear some muddiness about are we going to get sued over this or not? That's always in the back of my mind.
The only reason I said 1.8 is that at least we still have LAFCO in terms of legal exposure. We would have a major state recognized agency whose numbers we were in agreement with.
Right.
If we say 1%, we're out twisting in the wind alone.
Well, I know, Mike, but you know, I just had to put it out there.
Does LAFCO actually use those numerals?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
1.8.
It's in their.
It's in our sphere of influence.
So yeah, it's in the EIR, isn't it?
And it's in the EIR.
The EIR introduced knows about. So think. I don't remember what page, but I do remember reading it.
I think my comment would be along with Ed's that you know I think we used the 2.3 in the last one because there was an environmental study done and it provided us with a good nexus to come up with the 51 acre feet. I think that you know, of course, the 1.8 would be a reduction. I mean, if we were to use that as the nexus, but you know, I do sort of have some belief that Ed has the right track. Is that we should actually get the urban water management plan and look at that, and also then look at see what the county does, whether it's 1.8 or what. I do think though that it. The district could take a position, though, on what the growth cap should be without necessarily tying it to our water allocation, you know, directly to our water ordinance.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to use as a basis. I mean, what is the basis for our concern other than our concern for the resource?
Right.
I mean, I don't see how we can come up with any number other than zero for...
Well,
for our basis, unless it's based on the water prediction.
Yeah, but you kind of have to remember, and I know that this is, it's a dog chasing its tail.
This is all politics.
But as you know, the newspaper headline put out in the Telegram Tribune, developers to pay for water.
Yeah. We're all paying.
If we want to allocate the cost of supplemental water across two classes, development and our rate base, is you've got to sort of remember that if we curtail development, we're increasing the rate base contribution, our existing customers, to it, to the supplemental water. So I agree that there's a huge resource issue involved in this, and we've staked out our position. You just can't lose track of the economics to resolve the resource, because as Mr. Nestor and everybody else has pointed out, they are linked. I mean, there's just, you can weigh the links, you know, what link is most important and how you do it, but you can't lose sight of the other link, and that is who pays for it. And it's easier to charge politically, I just tell you, it's easier to charge new development than it is your existing rate customers.
Well, now, we're saying that, but now, if we're really going to be bloody-minded and radical, we could declare a moratorium in the district and halt the effort to get supplemental water. Let the county go out and try to get it from Santa Maria. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the direction I want to go, but I'm saying there are more extreme positions than what we're suggesting. We're not on the deep end here.
Not in any of our lifetimes would the county go and pursue supplemental water from Santa
Maria. All I'm saying is that they're using the term moratorium, and yet the real potential for genuine moratorium is if they try to make our ratepayers pay for the entire cost.
According to this publication, I don't know which one, I can't recall, but it says that we have tentatively trying to obtain supplemental water from Santa Maria.
Yeah, they're having a hard time recognizing our MOU and continue to question the district and whether we're going to follow through. And all I can do is present, you know, the data, the facts. We've got there.
Here's
hundreds of thousands of dollars of expenditure to date, and we're
and the other components, what we've done so far. And the other link, I mean, there's actually three links. You know, one is acquiring supplemental water, the next one is the cost. But sort of what the glue is between all of them is this groundwater adjudication. Because we may be, you know, it looks like that Cal Cities and Usens and Woodlands are going to agree to 3,000 acre feet. And so again, when you start taking a look at it, you know, who's going to pay for that 3,000 acre feet, you know, in order to achieve it? Not who's going to pay for it, but how are we going to allocate the cost of that 3,000 acre feet?
Well, I want to assure the two board members who couldn't be there yesterday that both Mr. Verheilig, Mr. EB, and staff, they did an outstanding job. Presentation was well put together. Visuals were all there. They didn't miss any points. I think that the decision that was made was not made because we didn't make a good case. It's simply they had their minds made up before we started talking.
Pretty much. And at this point, I want to express considerable hell of a lot of appreciation to Mr. Eby for all the effort he put into getting the presentation. We rehearsed it, we figured the time, and of course you can never condense it in the 15 minutes, and we knew that, but we gave it a good shot, and really appreciate Mr. LeBron.
I'm convinced, without a question, that Cacho, unless he's snowing me, I've had two conversations with him in social entanglements. He doesn't understand.
Right.
He plain doesn't understand.
That's a very charitable thing to say. I wish I believed it. I think he understands very well. He simply is committed to unrestricted development, whatever the cost in water.
It's like, we had a rabbit issue behind us. So, that was the biggest joke since it is.
But anyway,
he doesn't care.
We're getting a little off track.
Okay. Well, as far as what we
psychological.
Does the board want to take a position?
As far as what we can do with this, I think it's a little late to do anything, because it would have been to respond to Kim's memo earlier, and I don't even know if you got that. We got it at the NCAC, but I don't know if you got it. But that comment that was to have been made a couple of weeks ago would have gone into her factoring what the staff has recommended. They've already recommended a 1.8%, and that was essentially the first reading. The second reading is the 24th or the 27th when they actually vote on it.
24th.
So the only thing that we can do right now is decide if we want to protest it or do an alternate, recommend the number at that date. And if we do, what's the basis, what's our basis for doing it, for a number?
We received Kim's memo, and I'll apologize for not forwarding it to the board. But it came down to, I didn't know what our basis for, they're drawing numbers out of their hats, the best I can tell. And again, it is my desire and my goal to have a groundwater monitoring program in place that will provide us the data we need to establish our ordinance based on water resources and provide that information to the county.
So the only question left for us is do we want to make a recommendation at the May meeting for a number, or argue for a number?
Or to support a 1.8% or a... that's right.
Are there legal grounds for us to take it beyond their decision? Good. I mean, I just think it's a question I have to be asked.
I just have a question. Was it discussed what the impact of the Woodlands is actually going to do to that area, where the pumping depression is? Was that discussed?
Interesting. They announced that there were 1,300 and some homes that were in the pipeline already. A six-year water supply.
Right. A six-year building supply. Building permits based on 2.3%.
And when they named pipeline, they left off the buildings from the Woodlands. That wasn't part of the... And when somebody said, right, by the way, where's the Woodlands fit in here? John Hand said, well, yeah, there's...
They're on their separate track.
Same area aquifer. For water, but...
Same aquifer, separate track for development, right? They received a... Well,
I think that we should still fight for the lower...
The lowest number,
and then, you know, it's like negotiating a job or something, a raise or whatever, because that's the way that's maybe...
Well, if the board wants to take a position, I'll be happy to be up there on the 24th. That'd be the only thing I have scheduled that day, thank God.
Well, I'd like to take a position, but I don't have any grounds for pulling the number. I mean, I couldn't defend any number I chose.
Outside of 1.8%, if that's staff's recommendation.
I would like to see Larry and there and arguing the principle, not coming up with a magic number, but reaffirming the things that we've said. I would encourage that. I'm unfortunately of the opinion that we are going to have to wait until our urban water management plan is done before we have some real defensible numbers. And at that time, I think we have to look at all the options. But for now, if there's no legal recourse, if they turn us down, they're not going to do anything they don't have to do.
I think one of the things that, you know, we're missing here is, and from my understanding from listening to Kim yesterday, there's going to be a much more detailed staff report on this 1.8 that is going to come out that would be, you know, analyzing this is not analyzing much. But analyzing their staff, the more detailed staff report.
But a 2.3 last year, which was not all fully taken, produced a 7.9 increase in residential growth, given all the exclusions. So if you drop it back to a 1.9 or 1.8 or 1, the real growth will probably slow down to 5. Which is about 2.5 times as fast as the state average. State average right now is 1.9 annually.
Yeah, well, the 2.3 didn't really produce the 7.whatever, because the 7.whatever is based on closed-out building permits, and those building permits were issued long before the 2.3.
Right.
So that's just pipeline versus what do we... So those two numbers really don't mean to me,
anything.
Except the fact that the 2.3% has been in effect for several years.
4 years.
Yeah. If the county says you're going to have a growth rate of minus 5%, we'd still wind up with 7.9. You know, I mean, seriously, it's just the way it's going to happen.
Well, if I might be so bold as to remind us that we've got a conference call at 11:30 in order right. that we'll need to move into the conference room. And
well, I think it would be a good idea for Larry to get up and defend the principal, but again, the number, I don't know.
Yeah,
what you want to do with that?
I think staff time needs to stay focused on food and water management plan and some of the other things. Yeah. They're really productive. This is not going to go anywhere.
Well, it wouldn't look appropriate if no one showed up, would it?
Oh, we'll show up.
Well, yeah.
This would be a big message.
Where it might be more critical, this is just me thinking out loud here, is to use your time to say, it's hard for us to develop a position without knowing when your items from last week are going to come back to the board so that we can see how these two things play into each other.
Yeah. Right.
My prediction is, you might want to fuel the fire of getting these directives to staff on the ordinance to require general plan amendments.
It won't happen this year.
Right.
I might tend to agree with you, Mike, but I think that if you keep the coals burning, you got a better chance than just saying.
Yeah.
I would like for us, if we're going to give direction here, I would like to give staff the option of when the staff report comes out, if you see something substantive there, which we don't have before us today, I think you certainly should be free to take such response as is timely. I mean, we're not going to meet again before then.
No.
20.
So.
That's right, we're not.
We
meet the day after.
We meet the day after.
Exactly.
I
don't want to tie their hands. Believe me, if you see something, I think you should jump in.
Yeah, well,
if it's profitable.
And the other thing, too, and I don't know if I need board permission to do this, but I was going to call Pat Beck and try and get, when are we going to get together and discuss these things?
I'd ask that you allow staff to make the contacts with county staff, and I'll update you and keep you posted. But I will be calling Pat Beck, talking about the Orchid Community Plan.
Okay.
And give staff-to-staff communication an opportunity to advance it before we bring our directors to the table with county staff.
Well, I was hoping that, I don't want them to do like they did with the direction they received on establishing a well-monitoring system and whatnot.
The only thing is
that I wanted to get the fire going under them at that level and have it work down rather than vice versa.
As a result of working with the RAC, I work with county staff all the time, and it's a different hat, but I don't represent the NCSD to them.
Mm.
The advisory council here also works directly with staff, which Mr. Eby certainly, as a part of that, would have access. So I don't think we're going to have a situation in which none of the five of us ever contact staff and you're the only one.
I understand.
Well, speaking for the district, I think you're the point man for sure.
Yeah, but I just wanted, is to have the board represented. And since I know Pat and her husband Ray, I figured I'd start there. If I knew Victor, I'd start there, but I don't know him that well. But I do know Pat. We've worked on a lot of other things in the past.
Do we have a recommendation or direction from the board on this so we can give ourselves a few minutes?
I would like, I don't know, do we have to have a motion on this? Can't we just encourage Larry to go speak and for you guys to respond if you see something in the staff report that is profitable? And if not, make your time count someplace else.
Yeah, I'd be happy to get up there and hit them.
No, I agree with Mr. Eby that zero is better, but one, and fight that 1.8, because is. That's just, that's
the one thing that we never include in our reports. And yesterday, Harry Ovid really stuck it to us with it. And he got three or four of us on the same question, is what is the actual capacity? In other words, if you're going to do conjunctive pumping, how many years supply is there? And the smallest number that anybody's ever come up with was 80,000 acre feet just under the mesa.
That's Baby's number.
Pardon?
80 is Baby's number.
It is, yeah. But that's what I'm saying, that's the smallest. The DWR has come as high as 240,000 at times. Although somebody threw out 400,000 yesterday, which was a joke. Nobody's ever said that.
The DWR number is old.
My only point being that so long as we don't answer that question convincingly, they're simply going to say, you guys have tons of water.
Yeah, because you don't know what's under there.
And
I thought
maybe the Urban Water Management Plan, again, will come up with something. Yeah. SAIC is in a position to come up with some good numbers there. So maybe we'll be answering that question too.
I thought it was around 114,000 acre feet.
Well, there's
now, how much of that you can pump, that I don't know.
I'm talking about all pumpable.
I'll tell you what it is.
Oh, I know. That's not all pumpable.
But anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Shall we adjourn to the...
Albert Way.
I think I have my marching order. Shall we adjourn to the conference room?
Do we have to do a closed session announcement or anything at this point?
Yes, we will be adjourning closed session.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. I hope that was recorded. We are adjourning to closed session to meet with our Santa Maria Water Council.
We're recording, and call it back in.
Okay, Mr. Seitz, would you report out of closed session, please?
Are we recording?
We are recording.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, and the record reflects that there is no audience. At 11:30 a.m., the board did adjourn the closed session to discuss three items, all under pending litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 545956.9. One was the Santa Maria Groundwater Valley litigation. Mr. Markman did appear by telephone conference, and we did hear an update, but the board took no reportable action. Again, there was conference with legal counsel on the Maria Vista versus the Napomo Community Service District. There was an update from legal counsel, and then the last one is Summit Station land use ordinance litigation. Again, we heard an update from legal counsel, but took no reportable action.
And if I may, I'd like the record to also show that Director Trotter had to leave the meeting at noon, so he's no longer present.
Do you need Donna back for the rest of the meeting? She's got to do minutes, doesn't she?
Yes. Okay. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, staff. We will go back into open session. Our remaining items are manager's report, committee reports, and director's comments.
And board secretary is on
the way. She was probably trying to eat lunch, Ed.
It's lucky she's here, not in the restaurant.
What's that?
Mike referred to you that you were a board secretary. I was asking if that was literally or figuratively.
Well, it sort of depends on how you spell it. Depends on the spelling, Jen.
And I give people my email address, and it's B-O-A-R-G.
Yeah.
No, I'm never bored. Too busy to be bored.
Okay. Our next item is manager's report, Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. I have a brief oral manager's report to deliver today. Your manager's been pretty busy in the last couple weeks. We've had a number of meetings and presentations, I think, that have overall been fairly successful. Of course, as we've discussed, we had the Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting that I did attend and responded to questions of the overall committee in regards to the level severity 3 declaration, and we did receive a unanimous vote from the Water Resources Advisory Committee to support a level 3 decision. We had community rate meetings on the 5th of May, and I think those were very effective. We had 70 members of the public show up out in Black Lake for our 1 in the afternoon meeting, and I went a solid 2 hours received a very nice round of applause at the end. I think most folks, while I don't think they left the room happy that their rates were going up, they certainly left the room much more informed about why those rates were going up, and the vast majority of the folks out there were satisfied with the information that was presented. In the evening, in contrast, we held a public meeting here for the Town Division, 6:30 p.m., and we had one member of the public come up or show up for the meeting, and we did away with the presentations and sat down and had a bit of a fireside chat with a very nice gentleman who recently retired to the community and somewhat seemed to be looking to meet his neighbors in the community. In any event, we had a nice discussion with him, and he actually did have some nice points and thoughts on water. Finally, we discussed the Board of Supervisors meeting. I think yesterday's Board of Supervisors meeting extensively through the course of our meeting today, but I too wanted to recognize Vice President Eby and his efforts in the presentation that the board gave. Director Eby put together the presentation. We met here on Monday to discuss the delivery of the presentation and refine points. Council came down from San Luis Obispo and joined us on that, and so we had a four-person approach where we had the one presentation that Director Eby put together with segments for each of us to present. It was, I think it was really well done, and I appreciate those efforts. Finally, I have an issue that I must share with you, and I'm not prepared to share in full. I received a call last Friday at the end of, again, what had been a long week with those community meetings and everything. I received a call from Department of Health Services, Kurt Sousa, the director there, in informing me that the district had violated our bacteria sampling criteria last month of April. We had a positive bacteria sample, which isn't so out of the ordinary. And then we followed that up with our routine resample procedure, which I was informed we did not complete to the full extent and correctly. But the thing that really took it over the top was later in the month we had a second positive in that location. And again, did our follow-up samples, and they were not conclusive.
What are you talking about now? Is this
bacteria samples in
where?
Our water system.
In the drinking water system?
Yes, in
not,
our drinking
not
water
Not in the
system.
Sewer?
Not in the sewer, oh no. Bacteria samples in the sewer, I assure you, would be positive.
Yeah.
But the sample reports, there's one right as we enter the driveway here that you might notice, a little blue stanchion there.
Yeah.
And these are sample ports throughout our drinking water system. The fact that our district is of a size where we do less than 40 of these samples a month, the criteria for violation is if we get two positives, even if they follow up with negatives, if we receive two positives in a month and do less than 40 samples, that is grounds for a citation. So they called me to inform me of that. And we expect then to have a letter within the next 2 weeks that will outline our citation and required actions. These actions will include public notice. And that's really the extent of it I have at this point. I have not had the opportunity as of yet to sit down with our operations supervisor and the assistant administrator to discuss the procedures and where we made our mistakes and we need to make our improvements. That just says how busy the schedule's been. And the supervisor was out on Monday. We are planning on having, we'll be reviewing this incident, if you will, lessons learned, and our procedures tomorrow at our all staff meeting. And I know the field supervisor has already drafted a write-up on the incident and has had conversations with Department of Health Services in follow-up, but I am not informed on those as of yet. I will come back to the board at our next meeting. I'll have a full written report to the board on this.
Well, what does this mean? I mean, does this mean the system's contaminated or
no.
Just an up?
We're not certain how come we had the hits. We'll be reviewing our sampling procedure. Sample collection procedure is typically the point where you'll get a false positive. Our system has excess chlorine in it to handle just this type of issue. So it's most likely, again, that the bacteria was introduced after the sample was taken, so somewhere in sample handling. But again, our procedures in following up were less than adequate with Department of Health Services.
Who takes the samples?
One of our staff.
Our people do.
Our people take the samples. That's correct. Mm-hmm. So I will also point out that, not by way of excuse or anything, but you'll notice also that staffing position that we've outlined for next year will be a conservation / regulatory compliance specialist. The reason why is it became evident to me that the day I walked in and signed my first report that I send off to the regulatory agencies that I'm the sole person responsible. I'm signing the report, and it is to me to make sure it's right. But we really don't have the procedure and the staffing in place to have a person dedicated to following these regulations, the updates, communicating regularly with the regulatory agencies, and that's a problem. Our reporting is, again, I saw this early on, that our reporting is not meeting the standard that we need to meet. And so we'll be addressing this again in the immediate and reviewing this incident and seeing what we need to do, improvements we can make immediately to avoid this in the future. Then also with, I think, with our staffing that we have proposed for the coming year. So, I'm sorry I had to have that to report, but those are the facts, and I'll be following that up with more information.
Okay. Are we going to get fined for that?
No, there's no fine that comes along with it, but the public notice is going to be
embarrassing.
It's going to be embarrassing, distasteful, and of course there'll be some costs associated.
Yeah, we'll have
will that be in the legals? Will that report be in the legals?
They said in the citation they'll outline specifically what the report has to say and where it must appear, and so we'll be following those procedures to the letter, I assure you.
Any progress in tracking down the salt pollution in Black Lake?
No, we did get our samples back, and I looked at it. It cost us about $900 to run a single run of samples. This is for the influent of the wastewater to the Black Lake Wastewater Treatment Plant, and it was not conclusive. What I'd hoped to show, we sampled between midnight and 8 a.m., and we were looking for a TDS peak, a salts peak, and we didn't see that. And so I haven't taken it any farther at this point, but our thought was, I don't know why we didn't see that peak during that time. It may have been the day of the week. We thought about moving it to a different day of the week, and then I've also asked Dan to look in to see if there aren't any sample probes that might cost us $1,000 or $2,000 to get a continuous read probe, but yeah. If it's going to cost us $900 to run it, boy, we'd recover
one
that.
One time, one night.
Yeah. Right, one time, one night, as opposed to continuous. So,
you know, the other thing too is those families in Black Lake, they're, you know, one or two people per household, probably two, and their water use is such that they may only have to run their water softener every fourth day or fifth day. So trying to just catch it on a one time, yeah, even if you had to spend a couple thousand on a probe that would monitor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it'd be worth it. Otherwise, you're just not going to see it.
So that's the status at this point, though. We'll follow.
What do you think that Monday would
Well, some systems actually have a little sensor, and when it reaches a certain level, it turns it on.
Yeah.
But it tends to be semi-random, and it.
Well, it depends on the age. Mine still has the clock there, that, you know, you set intervals, you know, so you can't set that it always happens Monday.
Yeah.
Because it's a 12-day clock. If it was a 14-day clock, then you could set a Monday, but it's a 12-day clock. Don't ask me how they got the gearing to do that.
if there are any, that was really all I had. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
I got three quick questions.
Just the corporation.
Even if the answer is short, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Hermrick well status, well monitoring system that you're putting in status, and the well monitoring status that you've been doing, what's the latest? Are you doing those monthly, what?
On Hermrick well, I heard from Tim Cleath, and I asked him, followed up and requested a referral, and he wants to do a more thorough analysis of the well log and also include past Hermrick, the quality data from Hermrick 1 in the upper, and so he asked that I fax him that information, and so I've done that, and so I'm still waiting to hear from Tim on a recommendation for a second opinion on that. Our well monitoring network, that is a $250,000 contract that this district approved last summer. I believe it was a 14-week schedule that has been far exceeded. I have a schedule on my desk now from our contractor on that item. I received that yesterday while I was out and had a chance to glance at it this morning. I don't find it to be acceptable. It has another 14 or more weeks in it, so I'll be reviewing that with our contractor. But that is something that I've made clear really since a month after employment here with the district that this is a top priority to have that real-time well monitoring in place. And so our contractor understands that, but I don't think performance to date has been satisfactory.
Have we been paying him?
He has not submitted. There's. You know, if we've paid anything out, it's less than 10% of the contract at this point. I know there has been investment beyond that, which is nice that he hasn't been billing us up front on all this, but at the same time, I'd rather tell you that we're completing that contract and we're 95% expense and about done. So, our well monitoring, we're doing on a monthly basis, and so I haven't seen the May levels yet, but I'll inquire of operations staff as to where that's
at. We'll have updated when it's the next meeting?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun, for a manager's report, committee reports. I know that the urban water, well, the water resources -other subcommittee met and was, you know, which we got your recommendations today.
Yes.
On the urban water management plan. Any other, I don't think.
The annexation committee met.
We actually, you saw on the blackboard in there some of the comments that were put together. Mm-hmm. I will type them out. I said I would, and I still haven't gotten to it, but I will make that out and circulate it to everybody so everybody has a copy of the upside and downside of annexations. The water supply also has a conservation obligation that we took on, and we still haven't set a meeting for that. But I know Ms. Wiersing has collected materials, and I've circulated a number of materials to you all in the last week. And so hopefully we'll get together. I'm hoping that the first step we take simply is to recognize the conservation we're already doing. As far as the county knows, we're only doing two things out of a possible 14 things on a list. We do need to do more than what we're doing, I think, but we are doing more than what anybody knows we're doing, so at least we should get some sort of recognition for what we are doing before we go ahead. So I'm hoping maybe Ms. Wiersing and I can work out a sometime before we leave today. The Annexation Committee, by the way, I should say, is scheduled to meet on Tuesday the 17th with Greg Nestor and Clara Bergman. So we've actually had two meetings in which we tried to get our ducks lined up first, which I think was very solid.
What time are you going to meet?
On the 17th.
1 p.m. is the
1 p.m. is the time.
Okay, because that's when we have the Kenyatta Specific Plan Committee meeting up at RRM Design, and I'm sure Greg and Clark
on the 17th
from 10 to 1.
10 to 1.
It's going to be interesting because we start at 1.
They will beam over, which is instantaneous, okay? I'm sure they're going to leave early.
I'm sure they're more interested in our meeting than your meeting.
My problem is I have to be gone from that meeting by 3 o'clock. Absolutely out the door.
I can't imagine 2 hours of discussion on this thing, but
I can't either, but if and
they know
they're scheduled to be in San Luis until 1, let's reschedule it to at least 1:30.
No. Don't worry about it. It will not run that long.
And they know our timing and that our meeting will be ending by 3. And they originally came to, there were 4 or 5 emails that I had, that were confusion over 1 or 1:30 on this thing. And finally, Clara said 1 o'clock and we will be there. So,
they will be.
Hopefully they don't leave us standing here for half an hour, but if they do, they know it ends at 3 o'clock.
Good.
Pretty much they've been more observers for the most part at these specific plan meetings, for the most part, except the very, on the first one, Clara did get up and give their hopes and dreams for Crystal Oaks, and that was about
it. I do think it's important if the meeting on the 17th is going to be productive, that we send them some topics or questions that we're going to talk about so that they're prepared to say something. We're expecting to get some information, not just talk to a blank wall.
And kind of back at you on that, those points on the board I thought would be a good place to start.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll get that done. And then we still did not make the assignments for the commercial committee, so I don't know when that's going to
have that on my list here. Okay, well, this Friday, as a result of the finance committee, we will have our budget workshop. You have you have the draft. It's easy reading, especially between 2 and 4 a.m. in the morning. But bring it, and please, be prepared to discuss if you have any items for discussion. Next is director's comments. Mrs. Worsing.
excuse me. I didn't have any personal comments, but I did want to ask Director Eby about the Susan Ayers when she came to the Save the Mason. Are you going to be talking about that on your director's comments?
Well, I wasn't, but I can. You're talking about the
West
mosquito
Nile
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, for the vector abatement district.
So I'm concerned about that.
Okay.
What the county's going to do. So that'd be good. That's all I have.
Okay.
Something
should come to the Save the Mason meeting.
I was gone out of town.
Well, you had one of the directors even gave a talk there about water severity.
Yeah,
as a rehearsal. Okay.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah. As far as the mosquito thing, it was very interesting. The two people, one of them was they're both county employees. One of them's a county health nurse. And the other one's a technician who goes around and counts mosquitoes and measures their disease. Mm-hmm. And basically, the season's not here yet. When it is, they expect it to be here in force. And the South County, it turns out, has less, the mosquitoes that live in the South County are less susceptible to the West Nile viruses than the rest of the mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. So they aren't real concerned about down here. But the mosquito is, highly fatal to birds and horses, and people, most of the people don't even know it if they've got the thing. And turn over all your don't let standing water hang around. That's the main message. They gave us a bunch of pamphlets. I put them out on the desk out here. So there's three different pamphlets, two in English and one in Spanish. And all it just tells you what to do. And it also, it hits people the worst that are really young who haven't developed their immune systems, and people over 70. So watch yourself.
We do actually have one verified case of West Nile virus in a person here on the Mesa.
Yeah. Yeah, we have had that. So.
Okay. We have a lot of horses.
And my other comment was what came out yesterday over and over again about the supplemental water and our partners is they kept asking what was the structure, what's the mechanism that we have to do this. And before somebody tells us what it is, I think it would probably be a good idea for use managers and lawyers types to come up with something that you think would be beneficial to us. What are your preferences before somebody else brings something to the table?
Right. But that's a rhetorical question in that context.
Sure.
I mean, we have an agreement with the city of Santa Maria. We have an annexation board.
No, I meant I think what they were looking for was the structure for other people, the Cal Cities and the Rural Water and those type of people, to be able to receive and participate in it. I think that's the mechanism they're looking for. And before that question gets asked again, it'd probably be a good idea if you had some ideas. Yeah. Even if you don't have a mechanism in place, have some bargaining idea.
That was the point of my question to Mark in the closed session. I'm hoping to get him to give some direction. I was thinking I can contact Bill Dendy, also seems to be pretty familiar as a consultant that we can use.
What about the ORCID model? How widely did you circulate that?
To all the county planning staff.
Does our board, everybody have a copy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, ORCID community plan or something.
Mine came to the house, so I didn't know.
Okay, Mr. Wynn, director's comments?
No.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Wynn. I do have, now that you mentioned the salt at Black, right now I have five. I'll make these short. The Kenyatta Specific Plan Committee again meets on Tuesday, the 17th of May, from 10 to 1. It's probably going to be 10 to 12, or maybe not even that long. Video survey results. I noticed we have a stack of returns now, so I assume those are being compiled and put together.
Staff has actually tallied those up. I have not looked at the results. I will include those in our next in your next manager's report next board meeting.
Okay. Don't forget, Friday is our 0506 budget workshop. So please bring your budget, and if you have any extras of these at home that you don't give back to Donna, I thought maybe we could institute an ordinance that for everyone that she hands out that doesn't come back, and you write your name on them, the ones that don't come back, the person is required to pay a portion of their stipend that they get. So if you get 10 in your packet and you don't give 10 back, and it's a $10 hit per, that means it's a free day.
So long as the chair is willing to pay for staff time out of his stipend to monitor this and keep track of it, I have no problem at all.
Okay. Friday at 9 is our budget workshop. Mike is correct in that the members to the Commercial Allocation Committee, I'm going to have to put that off one more meeting, I hate to say. Agenda packet preparation and the general manager's time commitment, and not just the general manager, but all the staff. At Ford Aerospace, we were the producers of Sidewinder missiles. Those are the heat seekers that, you know, and they reach out and touch someone, okay? And the production line was like probably what the agenda packet preparation is here, that you get your month's production out. In other words, you get your agenda packet out Friday afternoon and you go, oh, God, you know. It was a monthly production. And what the cycle had gotten into is people worked so hard to get it out and meet the deadline that the first week of the next month, possibly even longer, was just meaningless. People just didn't have the energy or the resources weren't there, and so that they literally got themselves into this break, you know, working 24 hours a day trying to get the last missile out the door. And I'm hoping that this new staff person can also to ease the burden on current staff and agenda packet preparation. I know most of it falls on the general manager, but I just want to put the bug in his ear that let's not have that panic production line that just everybody's so tired they can't see straight for the first week after they get the product out, to one that runs like a agenda packet preparation is almost a little bit of every day's effort. I don't know how you're going to do that, Michael, but I just had to bring that up because it so much reminded me of AIM-9J production.
That was AIM-9L.
AIM-9L was the Navy's version, and that production line, and AIM-9Rs and AIM-9Ps and AIM-9Ms and all those, that production line ran quite well because of how it was managed, okay? The other production line was Air Force. That was another contract. That was a whole other group of people. They didn't manage it too well. But we all, and I was involved with the AIM-9 program for many years. And with that said, that's all that I have for director's comments. If there is nothing else.
Oh yeah, one more thing. Bring your checkbooks to the budget meeting because I'll be having Heritage Day tickets there still available.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.